The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening to the Town Hall Review podcast, where we bring you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Our podcast is brought to you through partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece that I trust you'll enjoy. Morning glory and bonjour, hi, America and Canadians. I am Hugh Hewitt, and I have in front of me the Office of the Inspector General, U.S. Department of Justice report, a review of various actions by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Department of Justice in advance of the 2016 election. It will require most of this hour for me simply to give you an understanding, a fair and balanced and thorough understanding of how damning this report is. And it is damning. But I don't want to bury the lead. Let me tell you the lead. There are actually two leads. Lead number one. It is clear that if what is now known because of the Inspector General report was known prior to the election, President Trump would have won by an even greater margin in the Electoral College and perhaps the popular vote. The report is that damning. Secondly, there is an October surprise revealed in the Inspector General report, most of which is that the Bureau tried to sit on what they discovered on Anthony Weiner's laptop. Third, there was an extensive PR campaign, including the briefing of all former FBI agents they could reach on how to spin this. But fourth and most damning, the second lead, the intrusion analysis on Secretary Clinton's server, summarized at page 75 to 76, shows indeed, there was at least one compromise of the server that was discovered. And there is a conclusion that sophisticated foreign adversaries could cover their tracks in and out of the server. And that the draft of the report by former FBI Director Comey, the first draft went from concluding that it was, quote, reasonably likely that hostile actors had invaded the server, to the final drafts that it was possible. Many other people are focusing on the many and obvious professional collapses of the, quote, mid-year team, close quote, when it came to technique and ethics. I remain focused on the fact that the server had to have been compromised, and all the recovered and missing emails from that server are in the possession of hostile powers, and we still don't have a damage assessment of what the unsecured server did to everyone else connected to it. Given the limits imposed on the Inspector General, the blinders put on by law and by design, we will never know. It's a damning report, but it doesn't help the country fix the damage at all. Take a look at footnote 75. FBI analysts and prosecutor too told us that former President Barack Obama was one of the 13 individuals with whom Clinton had direct contact using her ClintonEmail.com account. Obama, like other governmental officials, had a pseudonym. Then begin to consider hostile actors lurking on the server, undetected, not possible of detection. And imagine, just imagine what they saw and with what they saw what they did. Now, there's many other things, but I'm going to read to you the go-to by Kim Strassel. Kim Strassel has, first of all, a Twitter thread that reads this way. Don't believe anyone who claims Horowitz didn't find bias. He very carefully says he found no documentary evidence that bias produced, quote, specific investigatory decision. That's different, writes Strassel. It means he didn't catch anyone doing anything so dumb as writing down that they took a specific step to aid a candidate. You know, like, quote, let's give out this Combetta immunity deal so nothing comes of that that will derail Hillary for the president. But in fact, Kimberly Strassel continues, he finds bias everywhere. The examples are shocking and concerning, and he devotes entire sections to them. And he very specifically says in the summary that they, quote, cast a cloud, close quote, on the entire, quote, investigation's credibility. That's pretty damning. Meanwhile, continues Strassel, the same cast of characters who the IG has now found to have made a hash of the Clinton investigation and who demonstrate such bias seamlessly moved to the Trump investigation. And we're supposed to think they got this one right? She continues, also don't believe anyone who says this is just about Comey and his instances of insubordination, though they are bad enough. This is an indictment broadly of an FBI culture that believes itself above the rules it imposes on others. People failing to adhere to their recusals, Kadzik, McCabe, Lynch hanging with Bill, staff helping Comey conceal details of pressure from DOJ bosses, use of personal email and laptops, leaks, accepting gifts from media, agent affairs, relationships. She continues, it also contains stunning examples of incompetence. Comey explains that he wasn't aware the Wiener laptop was a big deal because he didn't know Wiener was married to Huma Abedin. Then they sit on it a month, either because it fell through the cracks, wow, or were more obsessed with Trump. She concludes, and I can still hear the echo of the howls from when Trump fired Comey. Still waiting to hear the apologies now that this report has backstopped the Rosenstein memo and the obvious grounds for his dismissal. The Wall Street Journal has this editorial, The Disgrace of Comey's FBI. The long-awaited Inspector General's report on the FBI's handling of the Hillary Clinton investigation makes for depressing reading for anyone who cares about American democracy. Self-government depends on public trust in its institutions, especially law enforcement. The IG's 568-page report makes clear that the FBI under former Director James Comey betrayed the public trust in a way not seen since J. Edgar Hoover. We use the Hoover analogy advisedly, realizing that the problem in this case was not rampant illegal spying. Though IG Michael Horowitz's conclusions are measured, his facts are damning. They show that Mr. Comey abused his authority, broke with long-established Justice Department norms, and deceived his superiors and the public. While the IG says Mr. Comey's decisions were not the result of political bias, he presided over an investigating team that included agents who clearly were biased against Donald Trump. The damage to the Bureau's reputation and to the thousands of honest agents will take years to repair, the Journal continues. The issue of political bias is almost beside the point. The IG scores Mr. Comey for ad hoc decision-making based on his personal views. Like Hoover, Mr. Comey believed that he alone could protect the public trust. And like Hoover, this hubris led him to make egregious mistakes of judgment that the IG says negatively impacted the perception of the FBI and the department as fair administrators of justice. The report scores Mr. Comey in particular for his conscious decision not to tell Justice Department leadership about his plans to independently announce an end to the investigation at his July 5 press conference, in which he exonerated but criticized Mrs. Clinton. And the IG also scores his action 11 days before the 2016 presidential election, on October 28, to send a letter to Congress saying the investigation had been reopened. The decision to prosecute belongs to the Attorney General and Justice, not the FBI. And the FBI does not release derogatory information on someone with whom it is against whom it is not bringing charges. Regarding the October letter, continues the Journal, informing Congress that the FBI was renewing the investigation, the FBI policy is not to announce investigations. Quote, we found unpersuasive Comey's explanation, deadpans the IG. Quote, we found that it was extraordinary and insubordinate for Comey to conceal his intentions from his superiors, the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General, for the admitted purpose of preventing them from telling him not to make the statement and to instruct his subordinates in the FBI to do the same, says the report. Comey waited until the morning of his press conference to inform AG Loretta Lynch and DAG Sally Yates of his plans to hold one without him, and did so only after notifying the press. As a result, Lynch's office learned about Comey's plan via press inquiries rather than Comey. Moreover, when Comey spoke with Lynch, he did not tell her what he intended to say in his statement. All this underscores the case that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein made when he advised President Trump in May 2017 that he should fire Mr. Comey. The president's mistake was not firing Mr. Comey immediately upon taking office on January 20th, 2017, as some of us advised at the time. As for political bias, the IG devotes a chapter to the highly partisan text exchanged over FBI phones between FBI personnel. The IG says he found no evidence of political bias affected investigative decisions, but the details will be fodder for those who think otherwise. For one thing, the political opinions ran in only one direction, against Mr. Trump. Then there is the case of FBI agent Peter Stroke and his decision to prioritize the Russian investigation over following up on Mrs. Clinton emails. The IG concludes that Mr. Stroke's text messages led us to conclude that we did not have confidence that Stroke's decision was free from bias. It goes on and on. The larger damage here, it concludes, is to trust in institutions that are vital to self-government. Mr. Trump will use these attacks to attack the FBI, but most agents are honest and nonpartisan. Christopher Wray, the new FBI director, promised Thursday to implement the IG's recommendation. And the cleanup task is larger. He can start by ending the FBI's stonewall of Congress on document requests. Mr. Wray and AG Sessions have to understand that radical measures are needed to restore public trust in both the FBI and the Department of Justice. If they won't do it, someone else must. I'll be right back. I am Hugh Hewitt. On the day after the release of the Inspector General report, the number one lead is, without a question, if we had known before the election what is contained in this report, Donald Trump would have won even more decisively over Hillary Clinton in the Electoral College and might have won the popular vote. It is so damning. Now, Kimberly Strassel has a column this morning, which I want to also read to you, in addition to the tweets which I read to you earlier. It begins, Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz's 500-page report covers plenty, but it can be distilled to two words he uses to describe the Federal Bureau of Investigation during the 2016 election, insubordination and bias. Two terms that are chilling in connection with such a powerful agency. That won't be the message from Democrats and most of the press, who will focus on a few episodes they will claim cost Hillary Clinton an election. Watch for them to blame former FBI Director James Comey, whom the report faults for, quote, a serious error of judgment, for having, quote, concealed information from superiors, and for, quote, violation of or disregard for departmental and bureau policies. True, the report is damning about the man who lectures Americans on higher loyalty. It describes how an insubordinate Mr. Comey was as early as April 2016, considering how to cut his Justice Department bosses from a public statement exonerating Hillary Clinton. He hid his scheme for fear that, quote, they would instruct him not to do it, and therefore was able to avoid supervision. He then, quote, violated longstanding department practice and protocol by using his July 5 press conference for, quote, criticizing Clinton's uncharged conduct. In October, he made public that the FBI had reopened the investigation, even though the Justice Department recommended he not do so. Mr. Comey went rogue. President Trump had plenty of justification in firing him in May 2017. Yet it is the report's finding on the wider culture of the FBI and Justice Department that are most alarming, continues Strassel. The report depicts agencies that operate outside the rules to which they hold everybody else, and it showed extraordinary bias while investigating two presidential candidates. There's Loretta Lynch, who felt it was perfectly fine to have a long catch-up with her friend Bill Clinton on a Phoenix tarmac, and whom the inspector general slams for, quote, an error in judgment. Mr. Comey's entire staff was complicit in concealing the contents of the July press conference from justice officials. We discovered that significant FBI resources were dedicated in October to spinning FBI talking points about the Clinton investigation. Rather than actually investigating the new Anthony Weiner laptop emails the Bureau discovered in September, we even find that Mr. Comey used personal email and laptops to conduct government work. There's former Assistant Attorney General Peter Kadzik, who was tipping off the Clinton campaign even as he took part in the investigation, and who, quote, failed to strictly adhere to his recusal when he finally stepped away. Former FBI Director Andrew McCabe also did not, quote, fully comply with his recusal, and he'd already been found to have lied to Bureau about a leak to the media. Speaking of leaks, Mr. Horowitz needed full attachments and charts to list the entire volume of communication between FBI employees and the press. Not only do these folks have no official reason to be in contact with the media, but they, quote, improperly receive benefits from reporters, including tickets to sporting events, golfing outings, drinks and meals, and admittance to non-public social events. Be ready to hear that the report absolves the FBI and DOJ of bias. Not true. It very carefully states that, quote, our review did not find documentary or testimonial evidence directly connecting the political views these employees expressed in their text messages and instant messages to the specific investigative decisions we reviewed, close quote. Put another way, he never caught anyone writing down, let's start this Trump investigation so we can help Hillary win. But the bias is everywhere. It's in the text between Peter Stroke and Lisa Page and those other three employees who are routinely, quote, hostile to candidate Trump. It's in Mrs. Page's freakout that Mr. Trump might win the presidency. Mr. Stroke's reply, no, he won't. We'll stop it. No, he won't. We'll stop it. It's in a message from an unnamed agent in November 2016 who writes that although FBI Clinton aide Huma Abedin had lied, it doesn't matter since no one at DOJ is going to prosecute. To which a second agent replies, Raj, none is going to prosecute even if we find unique classified. It's in the DOJ's decision to cut deals with Mrs. Clinton and her staff and shelter them from a grand jury and to agree to limitations in searching for and in devices and in immunity agreements. The report is largely neutral on all this, giving officials the broad benefit of the doubt. But it immediately follows the statement by noting that its job of evaluating the integrity of decision among key players cast a cloud over the entire investigation's credibility. The current FBI and Justice Department leadership can no longer justify its refusal to come clean on its actions. A neutral arbiter has found they made a hash of the Clinton investigation. It's reasonable to assume that those same players made a hash of the Trump probe. The sooner they acknowledge it, the sooner Congress can move reform these agencies so that no such thing ever happens again. More coming up on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hey, I am Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening today. Join me tomorrow morning on MSNBC at 8 a.m. Andrew C. McCarthy, the National Review contributing editor, now Fox contributor, as well as the former chief assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, is along with Kim Stroutzel and I think John Hinderacker, the three go-to people on deep dives into the Inspector General's report. He has not yet published his column. It will be out tomorrow. But he did note one thing in his Twitter feed yesterday. He quoted, foreign actors accessed Hillary Clinton's emails. Documents show. This takes me to page 75 and 76. I told you that one of the two major leads from the IG's report is that the server was penetrated. And I want to read to you from pages 75 and 76 of the report, because this is an ongoing problem. This is not water under the electoral bridge. This is not about cleanup of corruption. This is an ongoing problem. The FBI conducted intrusion analyses on each of the devices and other evidence to determine whether any classified information had been compromised. Now, this is Hugh talking. They didn't collect all of the devices, but they did get the remains of her server. An FBI agent, one agent, assigned to the mid-year team to conduct intrusion and other forensic analysis, forensics agent, described the team's efforts in this regard as exhaustive. He stated that those efforts included, one, examining the servers and other devices to identify suspicious logins or other activities, and two, searching numerous databases to determine whether foreign adversaries or known hostile domestic actors had accessed emails that the mid-year team had confirmed to contain classified information. Comey stated the following at his July 5, 2016 press conference regarding possible cyber intrusion of Clinton's email servers. Quote, with respect to potential computer intrusion by hostile actors, we did not find direct evidence that Secretary Clinton's personal email domain in its various configurations since 2009 was successfully hacked. But given the nature of the system and of the actors potentially involved, we assess that we would be unlikely to see such direct evidence. We do assess that hostile actors gained access to the private commercial email accounts of people with whom Secretary Clinton was in regular contact from her personal account. We also assess that Clinton's use of a personal email domain was both known by a large number of people and readily apparent. She also used her personal email extensively while outside the United States, including sending and receiving work-related emails in the territory of sophisticated adversaries. Given that combination of factors, we assess it was possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account, close quote. The LMH stated, quote, FBI investigation and forensic analysts did not find evidence confirming the Clinton's email server systems were compromised by cyber means. However, the LHM also stated that the FBI identified one successful compromise of an account belonging to one of former President Clinton's staffers on a different domain within the same server former Secretary Clinton used during her tenure. The FBI was unable to identify the individual responsible for the compromise, but confirmed that the individual had logged in to the former staffer's account and browsed email folders and attachments. According to evidence we reviewed, the FBI also confirmed compromises to email accounts belonging to certain individuals who communicated with Clinton by email, such as Jake Sullivan and Sidney Blumenthal. The LHM stated that the FBI was limited in its intrusion analysis due to the FBI's ability to recover all server equipment and the lack of complete server data for the relevant time period. According to the LHM, the FBI also identified vulnerabilities in Clinton's server systems and found that there had been numerous unsuccessful attempts by potential malicious actors to exploit those vulnerabilities. Nonetheless, the FBI forensics agent told the Office of the Inspector General that although he did not believe there was, quote, any way of determining 100% whether Clinton's servers had been compromised, he felt, quote, fairly confident that there wasn't an intrusion. When asked whether a sophisticated foreign adversary was likely to be able to cover its tracks, he stated, they could, yeah, but I felt as if we coordinated with the right units at headquarters for those specific adversaries, and the information that was returned back to me was that there was no indication of a compromise, close quote. That's one guy who did not talk to the agency, who did not talk to Michael Morrell. And Michael Morrell told me, of course, I'm paraphrasing, of course they got in. The President of the United States has exactly on this subject tweeted. FBI agent Peter Stroke, writes Donald Trump this morning, who headed the Clinton and Russia investigations, texted to his lover, Lisa Page, in the IG report that, quote, will stop, close quote, candidate Trump from becoming president, period. Doesn't get any lower than that, exclamation point. Now on to John Hinderacker, who has written notes on the IG report at Powerline, which you can read at powerlineblog.com. I haven't read all 500 pages of the DOJ's Inspector General's report, writes John, on the FBI and DOJ's handling of the Clinton email investigation, but I've tried to pick out some of the salient points. If I come across more items of interest, I may add updates to this point. Here are some observations. One, it's important to remember the IG has not looked into the FBI's Russia investigation, including its continuance by Bob Mueller. And today's report does not specifically address issues raised by the FBI's and DOJ's handling of that matter. However, some of the same people who are involved in both investigations, and the IG has disclosed limited materials relating, at least in part, to the Russia investigation. At this point, they are some of the most interesting aspects of the report, but such disclosures are incidental and non-systematic. There could be a great deal more where they came from, too. This text exchange between Peter Stroke and Lisa Page is rightfully being described as a bombshell. August 8, 2016. In a text message on August 8, 2016, Page stated, Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right? Question mark, exclamation point. Stroke responded, no. No, he's not. We'll stop it. Hinderacher continues, there's really only one way to read Stroke's reply. The FBI intended to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. But he tried to explain it, quote, when asked about this text message, Stroke stated he did not specifically recall sending it, but that he believed it was intended to reassure Page that Trump would not be elected, not to suggest that he would do something to impact the investigation. Stroke told the OIG that he did not take any steps to try to affect the outcome of the presidential election, either the mid-year investigation or the Russia investigation. Stroke stated that he, or the FBI in general, actually wanted to prevent Trump from being elected. They would not have maintained the confidentiality of the investigation and the alleged collusion between Russia and members of the Trump campaign in the months before the election. Page similarly stated that although she could not speak to what Stroke meant by that message, the FBI's decision to keep the Russia investigation confidential before the election shows that they did not take steps to impact the outcome of the election. That might make sense, writes Hinderacker, except that the FBI did not maintain the confidentiality of the investigation into alleged collusion. On the contrary, the Russia investigation, including the campaign, the claim that the Trump campaign colluded with a Russian, was the subject of countless leaks. To cite just one example, on November 1, 2018, NBC News headlined, FBI making inquiry into ex-Trump campaign manager's foreign ties. The story, like most news story nowadays, it seems, was based on leaks from law enforcement and intelligence sources. It is reasonable to suspect that leaks about the FBI investigation from law enforcement sources were related to Peter Stroke's determination to stop Trump from winning the election. Three, writes Hinderacker. Further to the point, the IG's report criticized the FBI for leaking and for generally being too chummy with journalists. He then goes on to quote that. Evidently, many FBI employees at senior levels, as it reflected in attachments G&H, were working hand in glove with Democratic Party reporters. It isn't hard to deduce the purpose of these constant communications. Four. The IG report also deals with the insurance policy text between Stroke and Page. Skipping the repeat of the IG report, John writes, maybe I am slow-witted, but I don't understand how that explanation exonerates Stroke. Per Stroke, the insurance policy means he thought the FBI should investigate the collusion allegations thoroughly right away, as if Trump were going to win, so they could release their findings before the election and thereby ensure that Trump wouldn't win? That interpretation is the only one I can think of that makes sense. It didn't happen, of course, because the Russia investigation found no evidence of collusion or other wrongdoing. Five from John Hinderacker. Once President Trump won the election, to the shock and dismay of Lisa Page and Peter Stroke, along with many others at the FBI and the Department of Justice, it is obvious they hoped their involvement in the ongoing Russia investigation would lead to President Trump's impeachment. Six, a common theme of the FBI employees' responses to the IG questions is that, yes, they certainly were Hillary Clinton partisans, and yes, they absolutely detested Donald Trump, and two, they thought Trump voters were beneath contempt and Trump's election would threaten the survival of the Republic, but those were only their private political views and didn't affect the judgments they made while investigating Hillary's obviously illegal server on the one hand and Trump campaign's non-existent alliance with Russia on the other. Right. No one can read the vicious, hateful, over-the-top partisan vitriol that FBI employees directed against Donald Trump, writes Hinderacker. Stroke and Page are not the only ones quoted in the IG report, he writes, and give any credence to that claim. These high-ranking FBI agents were politicized to the core and were determined to do anything they could to secure their candidate's election. Failing that, they plunged into the faux Russia election story in hopes of discrediting President Trump or even, as they explicitly discussed, bringing about his impeachment. The IG's report exposes a corrupt and politicized FBI and Department of Justice. And so far, we are only saying half the story at most, writes John Hinderacker at Powerline Blog. No one has yet looked into the Democrats' Russia tale or any partisan corruption linked to Bob Mueller's farcical investigation. Given the DOJ's bitter refusal to cooperate with the congressional committee that have constitutional oversight responsibilities over the department, has anyone tried to justify DOJ's stonewalling? If so, I haven't seen it. John writes, we can assume that the damning documents that have been produced so far are only the beginning. Most likely, they provide only an inkling of the information the Justice Department, apparently still dominated by Obama holdovers, is withholding from Congress or perhaps has already destroyed. He concludes, the unraveling of the effort to bring down President Trump has barely begun. Let me conclude by telling you, if you read this, and I printed it all out last night. The executive summary says, our task was made significantly more difficult because of the text and instant messages exchanged by FBI devices. I found that odd, weird. It wasn't made more difficult. It focused it. It should have given them the clue. I also note that they found it was extraordinary and insubordinate for Comey to do what he did, but they don't find that it's extraordinary and insubordinate not to go further and demand a referral to a prosecutor. We did not substitute OIG's judgment for the judgments made by the department, but rather sought to determine whether the decision was based by improper considerations, including political bias. We found no evidence that the conclusions by the prosecutors were affected by bias or other improper considerations. Rather, we determined that they were based on the prosecutor's assessment of the facts of the law and past department practice. I just can't believe it. They found that there were 39 different senior executives at the FBI involved in this. They found that they had 347 emails and laptops. And they also found that after discussions took place on October 3 and 4 about the Wiener laptop, no evidence that anyone associated with the mid-year investigation, including the entire leadership at FBI, took any action on the Wiener laptop until October 24th. And they did so only after the Wiener case agent expressed concerns on October 21st about the lack of action. They did nothing for 4 weeks. More coming up. I am Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening this morning. I want to conclude my assessment of the IG report by going to just a few things they say in the introduction. Understand, the IG found out that the FBI discovered the Wiener emails on September 26. The agent who discovered them said there were over 300,000 emails on that laptop. He said that evening on the 26th or the morning of the 27th that he saw one BlackBerry pin message between Clinton and Abedin, as well as emails between them. He said he recalled seeing emails associated with about seven domains, such as yahoo.com, state.gov, clintonfoundation.org, clintonemail.com, hillaryclinton.com. He immediately notified his New York office chain of command, and the information was ultimately briefed to the New York office assistant director in charge, William Sweeney. Sweeney, on the 28th, had a secure video conference with 39 FBI executives, including Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. On the 28th, he told McCabe personally there were up to 347,000 emails on the laptop. Nothing happened. Text messages between FBI Deputy Assistant Director Stroke indicated that he, McCabe, and William Priestap discussed the Wiener laptop on the 28th. Stroke said that he initially planned to send a team to New York to review the emails, but a conference call with the New York office was scheduled instead. Nothing happened. Additional discussions took place on October 3 and 4th. However, after October 4th, we found no evidence that anyone associated with the mid-year investigation, including the entire leadership team at the FBI headquarters, took any action on the FBI laptop until the week of October 24th, and did so only after the Wiener case agent expressed concerns to the Southern District of New York, prompting the Southern District of New York to contact the Office of the Deputy Attorney General on October 21 to raise concerns about the lack of action. So from September 28th to October 24th, nothing happened. Nothing happened. We found that by no later than September 29, FBI executives and the FBI mid-year team had learned virtually every fact that was cited by the FBI in late October as a justification for obtaining the search warrant, including the laptop. A briefing for retired FBI agents was conducted on October 24th to describe the investigative decisions made during mid-year to arm former employees with facts so that they could counter, quote, falsehoods and exaggerations. And then finally, most of the text messages raising questions pertaining to the Russia investigation and the implication in some of these text messages, particularly Peter Stroke's August 8th text message that will stop candidate Trump from being elected, was that Stroke might be willing to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral process. Under these circumstances, we did not have confidence that Stroke's decision to prioritize the Russia investigation over following up on the mid-year-related investigation lead discovered on the Wiener laptop was free from bias. Right. So they say we can't tell you that, but all the headlines say they found it's free from bias. It just doesn't add up. Here's the lead. If we knew today, if we knew on the day before the election, everything we know in this report, Donald Trump would have won by a bigger margin. Two, we still don't know what's happened with the server who compromised it, whether or not we ought to bring in the counterintelligence specialists at the CIA and other agencies in the private sector to find out what and where it went, the stuff that was on there. And three, we need a special counsel. We need a special counsel to look backwards and to look forwards. And I don't think Mr. Mueller can conclude other than his investigation is irreversibly tainted. Don't say fire him. Hoping he's concluding that on his own. Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.